Hey, Plant. First, let me say this before, because I want to make sure it's super... Jelani, this is going to be the cold open of the show where we open with a big joke.
Like in Saturday Night Live, how sometimes they had like somebody go up to be the president or something like that.
Mm. I'd love to get this clean, Griff.
Yeah, sure. Sorry.
To get this clean. Okay. Hey, Plant.
Uh-huh.
You were the last of us to get on the call.
Live from New York.
Jan Hicks.
Okay.
What the fuck?
What a fucking pull. Amazing. My name is Justin McElroy, and I know the best end of a game.
My name is Griffin McElroy, and I know the best game of the week.
My name is Chris Plant, and we're going to talk about this game.
My name is Ross Forsyth, and I'm going to be so happy to talk about this fun-loving adventure.
It's a romp! It's a romp.
It's a fun-loving romp, The Last of Us Part 2. Mm-hmm. This is, I want to say this right up front, this is our spoiler cast.
Spoilies.
This one's got spoilies, and not like some spoilies. We are going to go, I assume, to the very, very, very end of The Last of Us 2. Mm-hmm. If you have not played The Last of Us Part 2, and you care, I beg of you, hop off now, stop listening. But then come back. Play the game and then come back, and we'll see you then.
Yeah. I can't believe Ellie explodes. And see, like, that wasn't real, but that's, like, the kind of stuff that we are going to be doing.
So we can talk about Crash Bandicoot being in the game now.
Oh, shit. Okay.
Actually, did you get that? Did you hear that little bit of dialogue, by the way, when they're looking through the porn tapes?
No.
They're looking through the porn tape. This is very early in the game. They're looking through the porn tapes, and one of the porn tapes is called Smash Brandy's Cooch.
Oh.
Oh, man, I didn't get
Jesus.
That.
I was on the floor. Also, last non-spoiler thing, Naughty Dog, change your logo. Yeah. You have to change. It looks so ridiculous when the first thing after this grim-ass game is like this huge cartoon paw. Like,
it's like making the entire game and then putting a big dog shirt on it.
It really is. It's like The Last of Us Part 3 brought to you by Big Johnson. Like, come on. Anyway.
Their first logo was just a babe. Do you remember that? Their first logo was just like a babe with with blonde hair, and there was a nude code you could punch in to make the babe be naked. So that's Justin saying he wants that instead.
Okay. That is not actually, sorry.
Should we, I feel like this episode could get very, very, very out of hand very quickly. I am suggesting that we spend maybe 5 minutes at the top to try and summarize sort of the big beats of the game.
Okay.
And maybe we can relay this if we need to, but like, I think keeping it tight is important because the plot of this game is, I think, what is making it so sort of divisive, and it would be good to sort of prime everybody about that.
Yes.
While we organize our thoughts on that, can I hit one more mechanics thing that we didn't get a chance to talk about that I didn't really realize until I was playing it? Would that be okay?
Sure.
I am blown away. I think this game has a lot of really impressive achievements. I think the one that impresses me the most is, I think this is some of the best level design.
Oh, God, yes.
I have ever seen in any video game ever. So there's like three stages of level design. I think it's, I can only go this way. That's stage one.
Yeah.
Stage two is, I can only go this way, but you're making it look like I could go otherwise. Stage three is, I have no idea which way you want me to go. This is an absolute mess. And then I think that they're at this other level in this game where it's like, it looks like I could go anywhere, but I think I'm probably going to go this way. Mm-hmm. Like subconscious level, not even like looking for like the red door or the flashing house or whatever. It's just like, yeah, this feels like the right way to go. It's like almost on a subliminal level And I think it is really, really outstanding. I couldn't believe how many times I thought I was lost.
Yes.
And just ended up like, oh, this was right. Okay, great. Absolutely.
I think we may have done a slight disservice to, we talked mostly about mechanics last episode, but like the sound design in this game is also maybe the best I've ever, like from a, you know, not just like a voice acting and mixing and all that stuff perspective, but just like every piece of combat, the sound of an arrow whistling by, like every single thing about this game sounds like incredible. I think it is a technical masterpiece, but we're not fucking talking about that.
No,
are
we're
talking
not.
About talking story. About who story. Gets killed.
Who wants to take a stab at,
let me start until I get tired. Cause I think we also should talk about the end of Last of Us One. Last of Us One is a story about Joel, who's at the beginning of this a fungal apocalypse. His daughter is killed, and so he's a very sad man. He is living in Boston and has to get Ellie, who is immune to this virus, across
the
country. He's a smuggler.
A Han Solo type, but like by way of Lars von Trier.
They by the end of the game, they have grown close. He has sort of like learned how to love again, and he learns that this group, the Fireflies, the only way that they can make a cure for the fungal infection is that Ellie is going to have to die. So Joel says nah and kills everyone in the hospital, kills the doctor who was making the thing, like literally just butchers a bunch of unarmed people.
And here's the very crucial part of this entire thing, because I think it sets Last of Us 2 on a course that either of you like or dislike, is Ellie, and this is like how the game is written, is not given the choice of like, do I want to die or not? For some reason, the doctors do not tell her, but they do tell Joel.
Well,
and we find out in the game that they're like, why would you do that? And they're like, oh, we owe it to him. Surely he won't murder us all.
Yes, and Joel lies about it. Joel does not tell her the truth.
Yes, yes. Well, I'll get to that point. So Joel knows this. He decides, even though this is not his child, it reminds him enough of his child that he must protect this person over all of society. He will not give her a choice. Like, he can't just wait a minute and, like, let her wake up and then be like, hey, how do you feel about this? Instead, he kills everybody. And then at the end of the game, Ellie's like, hey, you know, like, what was up? And Joel's like, nothing. It just didn't work out. And then she's like, oh, yeah, that doesn't seem weird. And then now we're pulling out of the game. There's the question of, is Joel a good person? And the creator of this game has said multiple times that, like, that's just how papas are. That, like, every dad would make this choice for their child. And I think that is the weird issue of this game, is the game seems to be fundamentally on the side with Joel. It is reasonable that Joel took this action. And also that, like, that Ellie did not deserve this choice, nor that this choice was even possible, when it was so flagrantly possible that this could be discussed at any point along the way. And it is not discussed barely at all in Last of Us 2, which makes it even stranger.
Yes. Everything that happens in Last of Us 2 is an answer to that. That is why we spent some time on Last of Us 1. Last of Us 2, 4 years later, they are living in Jackson, Wyoming. Fungal infection is still going on. They never found a cure, obviously. And there is a growing resentment between Ellie and Joel that is explored mostly through flashbacks throughout the rest of the game. During a patrol, we get to meet Dina, who is Ellie's girlfriend and maybe the most pound-for-pound charming character ever included in a video game before. And Joel encounters a group of other survivors led by a woman named Abby, and he's with his brother Tommy, and they quickly realize something is off, and the group murders Joel in front of Ellie. That's the big thing that happens in this game that they wanted to keep a secret. Joel gets killed. The protagonist of Last of Us 1 gets killed by Abby, and then
he gets bioshocked, to be clear.
He gets hit to death with a golf club in the head.
Yeah.
And so Ellie and Dina sort of follow Tommy, who is Joel's brother, on this quest for revenge to Seattle, where Abby and her group of survivors, who are part of a larger sort of militia called the Washington Liberation Front, or Wolves, are holed up. And they're just straight up going there to kill all of them, specifically Abby. So you go to Seattle looking for Abby. Along the way, you encounter the other members of her group and dispatch them in various ways. You encounter a lot of infected in Seattle. You encounter a lot of Seraphites, which is like a religious cult. And you just that is the first half of the game, going through Seattle over the course of 3 days through increasingly treacherous environments and killing literally all of Abby's group. And then at the end of it, you are at this theater. Dina is pregnant, which has thrown a wrench into the works a bit because she is feeling very under the weather. Abby finds you in this theater and shoots your friend Jesse, who's just like there and is the Dina's former boyfriend, who is the father of the child, and he just gets shot in the face. And Tommy is held at gunpoint, and Abby says, "You know, I gave you a chance to live and you wasted it." End act one.
Okay, can I just discuss one aspect of this?
Yes.
Please.
The one thing I wanted to establish is, when do we find out that they are former Fireflies that are basically exacting revenge on Joel for murdering everyone? Because I feel like that was an assumption that I made very early on, like, who else could it be?
Literally, it's the moment you see them and find out, hey, we're the first scene, I think, one of the earliest scenes in the game is you see them outside Jackson, Wyoming. You play as Abby at the very, like, right there at the very beginning for a couple scenes, and they say they're there to find someone. You see them looking into the encampment where Joel and Ellie are living and saying, yeah, we're going to find him and kill him. And, like, after act one, they reveal that Abby's father was the surgeon who gets killed by Joel, and that set her on this quest for revenge, right? So they're doing the same thing. But like, that was not a surprising twist to me at all. And I don't know if it was supposed to be, but it was so clearly this game was going to like reckon with what happened at the end of Last of Us 1. So like, that's of course who that is and why they are there, and why when they're like, hey, I'm Joel, and the room goes quiet and they all look at each other, it's like, yeah, because you guys are about to fucking kill him.
Yeah
okay, it was not,
I just wanted to establish that the one thing I wanted to talk about, and this does not tie into the main story at all, Plant texted me about it, and I thought it's worth mentioning because I actually found it good, but I also appreciate that it was a little ham-fisted. I've played a lot of video games over the years. I've probably walked into 10,000 video game churches, like, over the course of ever. I do not remember I've ever I can't think of the last time I walked into a synagogue, if ever, in a video game. And you actually do in this game. Dina is Jewish. It doesn't come up until you sort of go into the synagogue. But she talks a little bit about faith, and it is a representation of Judaism that is, I would say, most closely associated with the Rugrats representation of Judaism, which is to say, it's painting with a pretty broad brush. But I will say, in the same way that when I saw Rugrats, the Passover episode, seeing this in a video game gave me kind of a warm feeling just to see like some sort of Judaism represented in a way that isn't like, B.J. Blazkowicz is Jewish and he's killing Nazis for revenge.
This felt like something that is tied to something other than World War II.
Yeah, right, exactly. Just like having cultural Judaism represented in a video game is like kind of a very rare, if ever, thing. So I was actually happy to see it. So
the great part, though, is you explore this temple, and then at the very end of it, of collecting all these things, you find a note from the rabbi.
Yeah.
And the note is the exact opposite of the game. The note is like, you know, like in times of darkness, we must like seek the light. And it's okay. So that's really nice. I'm going to spend the next 20 hours brutally maiming people. But thanks for the pro tip.
Yeah. That's weird. That's the one instance of dissonance, narrative dissonance in the entire game. So that's cool that you've highlighted it there. I was kind of disappointed in the first, first, what is it, guys, like two hours when Joel is killed. I felt disappointed just because, not because I felt like it's some great loss to the character. Troy Baker is getting work. He's fine. But I felt like he made a big choice at the end of the first game. And I realized seeing that unless they did some like timeline twistery, which there's a little bit of, but not much, that we weren't really going to get to see him struggle with the impact of that or sort of sit in that. I mean, as far as Joel is concerned, I mean, in the way the game has painted it, Joel made that decision and has gone on to live a very pleasant life I mean, as pleasant as anybody's life, as pleasant as anybody's life is, you know, in this fairly idyllic. I mean, there's like fucking barroom dances and stuff like that. Like, it's not the worst in the world.
Sure.
And the game has sort of said, like, well, Joel is fine. Like, Joel is fine with that choice. And I'm not saying, actually, that I want to see him punished for that. As a dad myself, like, I don't know. And I hope I would never, I can't imagine why I would ever be put in that scenario. Which is really a weird scenario, by the way, to hang two games on. If one of the biggest questions is, like, would you sacrifice your child for the rest of humanity to persevere? And it's like, what the fuck do I care? I don't know. Why do I need to think about that?
It's not a universal question at all.
It's not in any way, shape, or form. The struggles of parenthood are about, in my experience at least, are about sacrificing yourself and parts of yourself. What are you willing to give up in you and let go of in you for your child?
Yeah.
But it is very rarely like, hey, humanity's going to beef it if you don't let your, you know, like, that's, it's, why are we spending time talking about it? It's like such a bizarre, it's like the trolley problem. If on one end is your dad and the other one is all of the meds, and it's like, the fuck do I care? I'm never going to be in this scenario. There's no morality to think about. I don't know.
Is Mr. Met on the side of the meds? Question.
Yes, he's driving.
Oh, that's
the trolley.
Easy. Then I take the meds. So yeah, that was my big disappointment. And this will kind of get us to, I guess, the end of the first half, and then we can dive into all the second half. But first half is a nugget, right? They introduce so many compelling stories that are very universal. They introduce the story of, I don't know if we talked about this at all last week, but Ellie and Joel, and this idea of like generational divide and how hard it is for generations to communicate. And it's like, The metaphor here is even more extreme because Joel lived in a world that Ellie can't live in, and Ellie is reminded of that every time because of her passion for spacecraft. Joel's relationship with Dina and this question of like, hey, can you raise a child in a world that you know is going to be worse for them than it was for the generation before it? Like, what does that mean? And then there's also that love triangle between Ellie, Dana, and who's Dina's ex-boyfriend?
Jesse,
which is all interesting. So all three of those threads are great. And every time you're like, wow, they really set up a really compelling drama. I can't wait to see. Oh my God, somebody got their head blown off.
Right.
End of drama. And that is it, and now we can talk about the second act. They set up all of this really strong storytelling. And they're just like, you know what? We're not really here for that. We're here for blood. We're going to punctuate, like, just cut all of those stories short, and now let's go to another person so we can do that to them, and then we can just let them beat the shit out of each other and see who wins.
Did you guys want to see Joel? I want to try to keep it in the first half and then not spend forever here, but did you share my feelings about the Joel thing? Did that feel a little bit like of a truncation to you, or did it make sense?
I wanted to push back against that because all of the Joel gets killed in the first 2 hours of the game. Joel continues to appear in the game through flashbacks during Ellie's like chapters and during a... you play as Abby in the second half of the game. But I feel like we're dancing around that for some weird reason. But at the very, very end of the game, you do take back over as Ellie again. And during Ellie's parts of the game, you see Joel in flashbacks. And they are important flashbacks. And the flashbacks essentially tell the story of how Ellie finds out Joel lied and how she responds to that. And I think the punishment of Joel that you see is even during the good parts. There is a sequence in this game that will stick with me like forever. And I have mixed feelings about this game, but I think it's one of the most unforgettable games by its literal definition I've ever played. That's the scene that you have in the museum where you're exploring with Joel, and he's taking you there for your birthday, and you climb inside a spacecraft, and he plays the audio from the Apollo 11 launch for you. Like, it is so beautiful. It is like, it is it is Naughty Dog storytelling like at its best. But even during those scenes, and especially during the scenes where Ellie starts to figure it out, Joel, like, kind of knows he's doomed, both from a like a moral and ethical perspective, from a karmic perspective, like, you can tell he knows that it someday something's going to get him, but also and most importantly, because he knows it's not tenable with Ellie. Mm-hmm. Like, he knows that Ellie is figuring it out, and you can just watch him, especially at the moment where she confronts him and says, hey, I know definitively you lied. It is a staggering sort of facial acting, voice acting performance from Joel, but like, you see that that is the punishment, is even when it is good, even when he is living a life that, you know, Justin said was, you know, better than most, you know, like he knows he's done for. Like, he knows that he has spoiled everything.
I agree with all of that. My only issue, and you're right, that scene is unforgettable and fantastic. My issue is, you do all of that, and then at the very end of the game, we get a flashback, so we're still in this kind of timeline of the past, in which Ellie confronts Joel, and Joel's like, you know what? If I had the chance, I would do it all over again. And Ellie's just like, oh, okay. You know, now we can work towards peace. And it's like, wait, what? I mean, that's Ellie throughout the whole game, is like, on big emotional journey, and then somebody just repeats back the same thing that has pissed her off a million times, and she's like, it hit a little differently now.
Yeah. I think it's wild. I think her reaction is wild. I think it is weird that, like, the whole crux, the lie and the terrible thing that Joel's being punished for is, I could have let you beef it, but I didn't. And, like, I hope that I raise a child where if I tell her this exact story, she's like, aw, choice, Dad. Wouldn't have wanted to beef it. Thank you so much for that. Do appreciate the assist on that. Was 14. Don't want to die. So choice of you to kill all those scientist guys and get me out of there. Absolutely chill. Let's go watch a movie.
I mean, together. We haven't talked about it, but we should be very clear. Like, Ellie before, in the first game, before she goes into surgery and gets put unconscious by whatever, before the surgery, she makes it very, very clear that no matter what happens, the thing that she wants is the vaccine to come from her. She makes it very clear to Joel, there's no guessing. She will absolutely sacrifice herself to have this thing happen. Now, granted, she's young, that's fine, but like, there's no question about it what her motivation is and what she would do in this scenario. And Joel knows this. Like, Joel knows what she would prefer in this scenario. And then she reiterates it in this game. She's like, I wanted to die. You took that away from me.
I wanted my death to have me.
Right.
They explore that in the Left Behind DLC for the first game, where you explore like her first like love interest with a young girl. And by the end of that, you kind of see that nihilistic isn't like the right word, but just like this deep desire for something to mean fucking anything in this apocalypse, and she wanted to mean something, and he did not allow that to happen.
Right, and I would say, I think at to Plant's point, like, I think the scene between them at the end where they're discussing this choice that he made and how she feels about it, and the fact that she basically says, "I'll work towards forgiving you," is just like a total undercutting of the first game. Like, that is the most blah, like, way to wrap that emotional thing up, which has a lot of tension and a lot of power to it, but just for it to be like, we'll manage.
And the universal lesson for the parent is, at the end of the day, you can't control your children. Like, that's the right, clear message, is that, like, the thing I kept waiting for him to say was, this was your choice, and, like, I took that for you. Like, that is such a universal thing for a parent to understand about their children, that you can't control them and make these decisions for them. Anyway, should we talk about the second half?
Yes, let's take a break, and then we'll come back with a discussion of the second half of Last of Us Part 2. So this is the Last of Us Part 2, Part 2. Right, so that we make the flip at what is, I mean, not exactly halfway. I would probably say when you switch to Abby, you're probably at about the two-fifths mark.
I would say it's about halfway.
You think it's
about close to half? The epilogue is about as long as the prologue, and it's literally the same three-day period that Ellie spends in Seattle. You control Abby as she... Okay. This game's extremely divisive, right? And there's a ton of reasons for that, and we can get into that or we can't get into that, but like, I think for most folks who play this game, whether or not you come away from it liking it depends on if Naughty Dog succeeds in this trick that it is trying to pull, where now you are controlling Abby during the same three-day period. You see, there's a little bit of crossover. You see some of Ellie's handiwork, right? But if you can sympathize with Abby and be on her side after she kills Joel, then they're going to land some punches on you that otherwise, if you decide fairly early on, like, I do not like this character and they have not done a very good job of making me sympathize with her, they are not going to land, right? Otherwise, like, if that's the case, you're going to spend half this game just kind of spinning your wheels a little bit.
Okay. You are right in what you were saying.
Yes.
You're right in what you're saying. I think that there's not a but. It's just that is correct. My issue with this, the entirety of it. So we're really talking about two different things, right? The arc of Joel and whether or not his choice was the right one or not is literally we have summarized the entire thing. That is not dealt with, I feel like, outside of the sequences with Joel in it. Mm-hmm. We sort of wrap Joel up in flashback. And Ellie's journey is very much about the cycle of violence, right? And
I don't know if we touched enough on, she kills a lot of people. She kills a pregnant woman at the end, not knowing she's pregnant. Right. And by that point, she has completely just, like, lost herself. Like, yeah, she has murdered. Lost herself to this violence, and she is just destroyed at
she's
that point.
She's hollow at that point, yes. Yeah.
This is where it broke down for me. I'm not a violent person, right? And I almost feel like the game should ask me that at the beginning. Like, do you think violence is actually pretty cool? And then I would say, not really. And they would like, here is the Crash Bandicoot, you get it for free. We're sorry we wasted your time. Here is a free Crash Bandicoot because you won't get anything out of this. I watched the moment that they made the switch to Abby. I was like, oh, Eye for an Eye makes the whole world blind. I get it. And it's like, imagine if you played through this entire character story, then what we claim is that by the end of it, you might not actually want Ellie to fucking stab her in revenge. And it's like, I was there. I was there before. I don't like to kill people. I don't think we should be killing people. I think she probably should have been like, I get it. Whatever. This sucks. Like, we should let this go. The entire second half is like, we're going to do all this legwork. It does some other things, which I'd like to touch on. But the main idea is we're going to make this a sympathetic character where you might be actually understand why she killed Joel. I was fucking there. Yeah. I don't need to play 15 hours more to get me there. I was there. And so the whole thing was like hitting these dead notes of like, do you get it? She's killing that guy because he killed her. It's like, yeah. I get it.
And a lesser version of the previous 15 hours. It's like, what if it was also not as well designed and linear?
Let's not get, because that gets very messy. I do want to specifically talk about one aspect of what we were just talking about. Specifically, that transition that Justin's talking about is very important, because you're right, Justin, it does not land. And it's not just that she killed like a few of Abby's friends. It's that she's killed probably dozens, if not 50 guards in the most gruesome way possible, where you're like ripping their throats out with a knife. So like at that point, you feel so kind of nauseous about the violence that you need to ask yourself, would anyone come away after all of that violence being like, yeah, that worked out great. I was super happy with that. It actually is interesting because it ties in with, so the narrative lead on this game, I'm blanking on her name, but she worked on Westworld. And Westworld, the whole theme of Westworld for really almost all of it was this idea of like, hey, maybe people shouldn't be so awful to these.
Haley Gross
is her name. Maybe people shouldn't be so awful to these like AI people that actually have feelings, it turns out. And that, the twist is very similar to that, which is to say like, hey, you should feel bad about all these AI guards that you just killed, because now you're meeting them in their home, in their stadium, they're eating burritos and talking about Harry Potter. Like, you should feel super bad.
Right.
But I felt super bad because it was so gruesome.
It's already
gruesome.
Pretty bad.
It was already bad. So like, it just does not land.
Griff, blow through those narrative beats.
After reliving Abby finding her father and all of the other doctors dead at the hospital, you flash forward to this same 3-day sequence in Seattle. You wake up in the Wolf, the Washington Liberation Front compound, and they have their shit just as set up as Jackson. The parallels are just constant, right? They have a farm on a football field. They have like all this shit, right? You get to meet the other characters that you murdered, and a couple of other like new characters, and instantly they they humanize them or attempt to humanize them. And that's, I mean, there's literally not much else to say about it. You learn a little bit more about why they're at war with the Seraphites. That's like a big thing of the game. And I like, not only did I not necessarily jive with Abby, but also like, I didn't really care about the wolves and the Seraphites and their whole like war or whatever.
They had to, it really felt like they had to, they had to introduce an impartial third party that everybody could feel good about killing,
right?
No matter which side.
But even
of
that,
the-
but that is sort of how, again, the parallel of this second act. Abby is going to look for Owen, who is one of the people who Ellie dispatches in the first half of the game. They are former romantic partners. He has gone AWOL from this organization after killing another one of the wolves. He is held up at this aquarium that is kind of like his home base, where he has his little fucking blanket fort or whatever. You murder your way to the aquarium, and on your way you encounter two Seraphite kids who save your life after you are kidnapped by the Seraphites, named Lev and Yara. And you get to the aquarium after leaving those kids behind and you feel guilty about it. So the next day you go to check up on them, and you have to get the following sequence of events is you basically helping these kids out. Like, that, by following sequence of events, I mean the main body of the game, of the second act of the game. You have to get Yara back to the aquarium, where the pregnant woman, whose name I cannot remember, there's a lot
Mel?
Of Mel, yeah. She is a surgeon. She's going to cut her arm off because her arm has been terribly broken and needs to be amputated. So you and Lev have to go and get medical supplies and get back there. After like that surgery is a success, a main sort of narrative driving factor of the game is Lev is a trans boy who was like not accepted in this very religious society, but because they ran away, he fears that there will be retribution against his mom, who is still there. So he goes back to this island compound of the Seraphites that's about to be raided by the wolves. You go there with Yara to save him. Yara gets killed along the way, and after like a fuck ton of people get murdered on this island, you and Lev escape, and then
pause. A fuck ton of people get murdered, including one man that you shred with a like scythe. Like you literally pull his jaw off.
Yeah, you fuck him up. It's rough stuff.
It's intense. Although the sequence before that is fucking on the horse in the Flaming Village is fucking cool.
In a different game, cool. It would be. It makes zero sense in this one, but it's cool Uncharted sequence.
okay, so this is really the first time, unless I'm forgetting something, where you come across Ellie's handiwork, because you return to the aquarium. There is Mel and Owen, who both of them were about to escape to Santa Barbara on this boat and, you know, raise their child or whatever, and they are dead. And Abby like loses it, finds a map on the floor telling her where Ellie is at the theater. Boom, their paths get, you know, we reconnect right there.
And let's pause, because there's another act here that is huge, but I think we should like unpack this one first. Does that sound fair?
It's we can get through the final 2 hours of the game pretty quickly. Let's do
final
that
two
so
hours.
Be...
You mean the final like 8 hours? Because there's another 8 hour ride.
No,
we
stop
have to
it
do here.
No, it's 2 hours. I clocked it because I looked up a playthrough video, thinking like, "There's no, I got to be close to the end of this son of a bitch."
The Abby and Ellie square off in this theater. You are controlling Abby during this boss fight, right? And you get the upper hand. You have a knife to Dina's throat after shooting Tommy, what appears to be in the head, killing him, but he's fine, I guess. You have a knife to Dina's throat, and Lev is there, and Ellie says she's pregnant, and Abby says good, about to kill her, and Lev convinces Abby to stop, to not do it, and she says, "Don't ever let me see you again." She runs away. Flash forward to Dina and Ellie living happily living okay on this farm. The baby is there, and Ellie is suffering from like PTSD, panic attack, like really severe stuff. Tommy shows up, says, "I know where Abby is. You should go kill her." Ellie leaves after Dina says, "Like, don't if you do this, like, don't come back. She goes there, encounters yet another faction of terrible murderers called the Rattlers, who have imprisoned Abby.
They're just dickheads.
These are
actually like they dress them in the most fucking Freddie McKegbeer style. Yep. Just so you know, it is fun to kill them. These are subhuman.
We have 35 seconds to introduce these characters. Here's what they look like. Go. You've seen their fucking cargo shorts.
They're dirtbags.
They're dad rock, and they have like fights. They release infected to fight one another on chains. They're like,
yeah. That's where they're at.
Cliche Walking Dead characters.
Which I think is fine.
Yes.
That's hard to come by entertainment these days.
So Ellie says, hello, nice to meet you, and slaughters 1,000 of them. Finds
with a silencing machine gun.
It's me, the dark shroud of legend that your people have discussed in hush whispers, the one who descends upon your peaceful village and murders everyone in it.
So Abby and Lev have been captured by this group, are essentially crucified on this beach.
So it's actually a specific form of torture. This was very popular in Japan and was often done against Christian martyrs, where they put them up on a crucifix, but they don't actually crucify them. They let the waves come in and they die of exposure. Very, very, very specific form of torture.
Okay, so
I was led to believe, at least somebody makes a comment, that she got bitten and this is what they do to people who
it's torture.
Yeah, it's just torture.
It's just torture. It's obviously torture.
Right. There's a line where they say that she tried to escape, and this is punishment
for
her.
Is that what it was?
That's what it was.
I could have sworn I heard someone say she got bitten.
Ellie cuts her down, cuts Lev down, and there's this moment where they are both going to these boats on the beach to just like kind of go their separate ways. Ellie then has a flashback to Joel's caved-in head, throws Abby down in the water, says, you're going to fight me or I'm going to kill Lev. So you have this fucking brutal fight, knife fight in the water. Not like cool knife fight where you're like dodging blows. Knife fight where you are just slashing each other to ribbons. And Ellie finally, after getting two of her fingers bitten off, has the upper hand, is drowning Abby. And then you see these flashbacks to this final scene with Joel where she says, I forgive you, or let's work on this relationship, and lets her and Lev go to sail off into the distance. You return home to the farm. Sure enough, Dina and the kid are gone. You pick up your guitar, which is like a recurring theme throughout the game, and you can't. That you can't play it as well anymore.
You had those fingers bit off, you know?
You got those fingers bit off.
What a metaphor.
You got the flashback to the final scene with Joel where she says, I'd like to try to forgive you. And then she flashes back to the present, sets the guitar down by a window, walks off into the distance, cut to black. That's the end of it.
Holy shit.
There's a lot there. But I know we're going to run long, so I want to specifically talk about one element of Abby's story that is basically the turning point for her as a character, because up until this moment, she's basically supposed to be, motivated by the strength of her love for Owen and the wolves and fighting against the scars and whatever. And the moment that I'm talking about is specifically when she goes back for the two kids. Part A, I had no idea there were kids until it was explicitly stated like 4 to 5 hours after
really?
You meet them. I don't think it's ever like said out loud. I don't know how the graphics.
It's hard because Abby is so much, she's bigger, I think, like her build is much bigger. And I think compared to her, I just thought they were slight.
Right.
People. Yeah, like I right. just thought they were yeah, just smaller like, people than, yeah. than Abby.
So that's thing A. But thing B is the reason she makes this turn that is like the total opposite of where her character was before is because Owen says something about how, he saw this scar and he was old and he had given up and I let him live. And that just like 30-second story.
And she has a dream.
I'm sorry?
She has many dreams about the sequence where she finds her father dead.
She keeps flashing back to her father. Oh, God. And so like that, so the dream and the story are enough for her to completely change everything about her, sacrifice everything that she previously cared about.
I don't think that's true. I don't think that that's a fair way of encompassing sort of the change. And this is my defense of The Last of Us 2. It is a game about eye for an eye makes the world go blind. Right. I think that the nuance to that is not just that like violence leads to more violence and that violence is bad. It's that retributive justice is inherently like not fulfilling, is not satisfying, does not accomplish the very goal that is in the name retributive justice.
Except it's super satisfying. Cut to the kill shot.
The kill shots are so sick. No, I mean, and this is a thread that is carried through. Her and her group have some turmoil as they find Joel, and even some disagreement, like when they're close and can't even get it together. She kills Joel, and then the repercussion she has to live with, just like Joel has to live with the end of Last of Us 1, is that it didn't fix anything, right. And that, if anything, it has driven an enormous wedge between her and the only people in this world that give a shit about her. And that is something that Ellie struggles with as she kills all these people and, like, doesn't feel great about it. In fact, she just feels worse and worse until she kills Mel, a pregnant woman, and, like, fucking loses it, right? The game tackles, like, justice in that manner as something that is, like, kind of clumsy and, like, not all that satisfying. So that, in my opinion, is like, there's a lot we don't see before this 3-day period in Seattle. That is why she is making this change. It's like, you can tell, like, shit's not good as she's walking around the Wolf compound, like, talking to all these people. Like, things have reached a breaking point.
But the problem is that idea is undercut. So she goes through the whole game. She's basically protecting Lev. She becomes Lev's guardian. She saves him from the island. She rides through all this fire. She rips a guy's jaw off to save Lev. She goes back. She sees that Ellie has murdered Mel and Owen. And then she has a choice. She can do the thing where she basically takes care of Lev and sends him off to Santa Barbara, which is maybe safe, and she's with him and everything's great. Or she can risk all of that to go to the theater and try to exact her version of revenge on Ellie, which seems like a total re-reversion of where she was previously.
And that's the issue, is that question gets played out over and over and over in the end. The other thing that happens is, like, Abby says, you know, like, I don't want to see you again. And you would think that Ellie, after her entire experience with the first half of the game, would be like, got it. You would also think that Dina, who has, like, seen all these things Ellie had done, would be like, listen, I love you, but I don't think I can live in a room far away from people with you because you kill people for sport. But instead, what happens is we get this sequence that it feels very like, well, it's like the cool video game sequence where it's like, and now we're on a farm and we're herding sheep. Like, there's just something about it that's, like, so Red Dead. And then it's like, well, no, now we have to learn it again. And the only way for Ellie to do this is to go all the way to Santa Barbara. She travels literally across the country during a post-apocalypse, slaughter her way through this compound of rattlers, find Abby, pull her off of being tortured, because apparently she could have just let her, she could have been like, you know what, I'm just going to sit here and let the waves ride out. Has to beat the snot out of her, forces her to fight her, and then while strangling her, and I don't know if you noticed the symbol, her reflection in the water is Abby underwater. And then in the middle of all of it, she's like, I know I came all the way across the country and just killed like another 1,000 people, but now something, now a memory kind of poof changed in my mind, and now I think it's okay, and now we've learned our lesson. Mm-hmm. And now I'm going to go all the way back home. Which also why, and then again, like, the thing that it dodges, which is like the thing that you keep waiting for them to just talk about, the very obvious thing, is for Abby to say, I know who you are. You are the one person who could be the cure. I am a former Firefly. I am going to Santa Barbara. There might be a way for us to still make a cure. I have spared your life. Why do you not come with me? Or when they're in Santa Barbara, just convey this information in any way possible. Hey, you want to save people? Turns out that's actually an option, but it's never said.
But I don't think that's bad storytelling. Like, it is people making constantly the wrong decisions. And again, like, the wedge, Chris, that, like, keeps that exact scenario from happening, that keeps people from having that conversation, is this sense of justice. They've all learned the lesson by the end.
Like, how after,
like, nobody changes, right? Like, even Joel, and this is seen in Joel's final scene in the game, like, he hasn't changed. He would do the same fucking thing. Like, nobody changes in this game. Ellie is constantly offered the opportunity to just fucking leave and doesn't, because she has to get this justice. Well, and like, I don't think that characters making the wrong decision and being poisoned by the sense of justice and being poisoned by how much sort of like sunk cost fallacy violence they've committed so far is bad storytelling. In fact, I would argue the opposite. Like, I think it is a very real, it's not just that violence leads to more violence, it's that violence ruins everything.
Yeah. I just want to put a bow on my point. I think there's an argument for being good storytelling and bad storytelling. The good storytelling, the really generous reading here, is the, like, this is Aristotelian high tragedy. That these people are not human, that they are different than us, that they are so driven by this one core idea that they will make decisions that we would never make. And that everybody around them is like, hey, stop doing that, and they can't, and that's tragic. So, like, I think in that way, that I honestly think that's what they were going for. I don't like that. As a story of, like, just modern drama storytelling, I don't think it works because anybody, no matter how poisoned you are, no matter how dark it has gotten, at some point you would say, I know who you are. You want this thing. I also have this thing. Like, you would at least convey the information. Maybe you wouldn't invite them for, like, a party together, but you would at least convey the information. And that, it drove me crazy throughout this whole game how many times things were prevented from moving forward just because characters arbitrarily were like, I'm just not going to share this information that is absolutely crucial to everybody.
It's not arbitrary. Okay.
Well, I would also add, like, it's one thing to do the, like, very directed, unchanging characters for a two-hour movie. For 30 hours
it's exhausting.
Not have characters change is outrageous and kind of inexcusable, to be perfectly honest. Like,
the character that changes is Abby, though, right? Like, with her relationship with Lev and Yara, like, you are that is the trick, right? That is the sympathy that you are supposed to feel is because, hey, she is warming up to these two kids and you know, fighting against Lev's persecution. Isn't she great? Like, that is not afforded to Ellie. That is only afforded to Abby because they really need you to sympathize with her even a little bit for the game to work.
You guys mind if I hop in here?
Yeah. Yes, please.
I'd just like to take a minute. This game sucks.
wow.
And I feel like in every sense, it's like, it's very accomplished in a lot of different ways. And I told Russ, I was waiting up until literally the end of the game. I had not made up my mind about this thing because what I saw was, like, there's a lot of moving pieces, and if they can pull them together in, like, something I don't see coming, because I didn't know how this would end, but I thought if they could pull these pieces together, it could be genius. And it pretends to, but it's not saying anything. If it was saying something, here's what Plant said would have happened. Or the fact that Abby cared so much for Lev would have started a reverse chain reaction that would make Ellie let her go. In the same way that violence triggered violence, they would at any point show that peace could trigger peace. But instead, something like that, right? That only works with violence, though. Because, and this is the fucking biggest problem with this game to me, Abby makes the decision at the very beginning of the game to spare Ellie. She does not kill Ellie, and she is punished for that. And it makes the entire rest of the game fucking suspect. This game is saying nothing except maybe violence is bad, and yet they have this company, and this is not everybody's, so many people have been doing this, but still, I'm going to say the fact remains. This game says nothing other than wanton violence is bad, and yet this company has been profiting off of the joy of that for 15 years. And this game is not them reckoning with their past in the way that, like, God of War, the new God of War, feels like that. This is more of that. For every bit of this is undone, every message of, like, you know, violence is pretty bad, I guarantee you their next game, be it an Uncharted or a Last of Us or whatever, will have that level, like, have a level of violence.
Increased
in
accuracy of larynxes getting pulled out of necks.
I mean, it's absolutely graphic. Larynxes. There are two options for the brutality of this game, and it is either, one, to convince me that you shouldn't fucking bite people's throats out, or two, to make it cool or fun or shocking or exploitative, whatever, to sizzle it up a little bit. And since I am in no way thinking that that level of violence is cool, I've now just had to be subjected to it for 30 hours and learn nothing. And like that to me is the, that is why this game, like I felt like at any point they could have just said something that would land and would make a point. And without that, it's just fucking nihilism. Like it's just, it's nihilism that even worse, it doesn't even have a point about nihilism. And that is where I landed at the end of this game.
I think I'm coming off most positive about the game. I still think it is flawed. I despise Last of Us 1, but I think this is a step up from Last of Us 2, which is probably why I don't have a lot of problems that, let's say, most YouTubers have with the game. Which, by the way, we could do a whole second episode, or third episode, I guess, about like the backlash, the divisiveness, the Metascore bombing, the all that shit. I think that if this game did have a positive message at the end of it, that would undo it. Like, I think if this game, you feel bad at the end of this game. You walk away alone because of your actions at the end of this game. The violence has destroyed everyone's lives, and there is no learning that has happened. There is no message. I feel like the closest you get, right, is this flashback scene with Joel, which I think is actually a pretty artful way of doing it, because if the game had ended with, and you know what? I think that I've grown because of this and I'll never do it again. Like that would undo literally what the tone of the rest of the game was, which is like, yes, would violence it? Is bad. I think it would actually
justify the game, because if he had learned, then I would understand why Ellie did all this. If he didn't learn anything, yeah, it's like,
or didn't, because for me, Griff, if they had instead, like, Ellie had killed Abby, and that was the thing, and then she was all alone. Like, at least that's something, right? Like, at least that says
her letting Abby go after literally 10 minutes before, like, slaughtering a whole compound of rattlers, like, that bit doesn't land. I'm saying that, like, the message of this game is that, like, these people's lives have been ruined by violence. I think it's easy and, like, trite to say, like, this game is all about how violence is bad, because I think this game is about that, but I also think it explores it to a depth that, like, a video game has not done before, and I think that Naughty Dog is kind of the company that has to do that, because it's called the fucking Nathan Drake dilemma of, here's the charming rogue who's just slaughtered thousands of people. I think that, like, you get to the end of this game, and Ellie hasn't changed that much, because violence has fucking poisoned her life, and, like, that's it. Like, that's the message of the game. I don't think there can be a redemptive arc at the end of it.
You can't do that and expect me to take it seriously when I'm also eating 60 pills to do headshots. Yeah. Like, I'm not kidding. It's not a joke.
I know.
Like, well, and do that in, like, a 6-hour indie game where you're actually not making violence fun, and you're actually, like, saying something about it with gameplay. You cannot have it is absolutely, like, have your cake and eat it too.
And I don't know if you've seen Neil Druckmann's Twitter account, but he's sharing, you know, these, like, compilation videos of, like, sweet kills, and it's like that's where I'm just, like, lost, where it's like, what is this? Like, what are you saying whatsoever?
I don't want optimism. I just want I just want it to say something, like, narrative satisfaction, or otherwise it's not a story.
Yeah, we need to find a way to wrap up, because we're going very long.
Actually, we don't. We can just apparently stop and have Joel play a fucking guitar song. And did you learn anything? I hope so, because that's the end of the game.
To kind of mesh together Justin and Griffin's points, I think the biggest bummer for me is, like, sure, Naughty Dog, honestly, it could be the right studio to make anything. They're clearly very talented. Every little bit of this game was made with extreme talent. The bummer is that this is the game that they decided to make, and that this is the game that they felt compelled to make, and this is the game that is, like, somehow necessary to be made in video games. I agree with Justin that, like, I just don't think we need to answer this dilemma. You want to answer this dilemma? Stop making every game about shooting people in the face. That's how you answer it. You start making games. Like, you have
that
so
would be
much,
transgressive. Yeah. That says something. That does
and
something.
Clearly,
if that's what you're actually after, like, change, then change.
And they're interested in that. But instead, it's this thing of, like, we're kind of embarrassed by this thing that we're making, but we're going to still make it. We're going to make it better than it's ever been made before. But we're going to let you know that it's also pretty gross.
But to paint this in the last night. This is the last defense I will make of Last of Us 2, which, boy howdy, I'm coming off as a real fucking Sony crony this episode, huh, boys? A lot of the, as soon as I finished the game, I knew how divisive it was, and I started to dip into some of those YouTube big screaming. Well, no, because I wanted to kind of know how the other half lives, right? And there's plenty of, you know, bigotry sort of fueling some of that fire. But a lot of it is like people who loved the first game and didn't like what happened to, specifically to Joel in this game, didn't like the game's message about violence, right? And the common thing that I kept seeing was this game constantly makes you try to feel bad. It tries to make you feel bad for playing the game and tries to make you feel bad for the decision that Joel made at the end of the game. And I didn't like that. And to me, that's what I think is so sort of important about this game, is that, like, I think for a lot of people, they have not had to confront that violence in this game before. There's plenty of people who played all four Uncharted games, five including Lost Legacy, six including Golden Compass, I don't know, the PSP one, who got to the end of those games and, like, the Nathan Drake dilemma didn't even register, right? I think that if you know the term ludonarrative dissonance, like, maybe it's like, maybe it is a, they were treading, you know, covered ground at that point. But I think it is staggering the adherence to this idea of violence being poison, because I think there's plenty of people for whom, like, that idea has never crossed their mind when they think about video games.
Okay, this is the last. I know we got to wrap it up. I know. Fresh is giving me the wrap it up. Then don't pretend like you're not part of the fucking problem. You've been desensitizing people to this for 15 years, and you wonder why they're violent. You wonder why you've been giving them points for headshots for a decade and a half, and you wonder why they're not more sensitive about violence. And you're still doing it, by the way. There's a raid on a compound of 30 people. You have to reckon with every one of those kills. Every once in a while, you have to look back and be like, damn, that's a lot of corpses, even for me.
Oh, well. That one was named Mark. I know that body used to belong to a Mark.
He liked Frito brand corn chips. Do you feel bad? Yeah, I do. Do you want me to kill 60 more? Only if you want all their scissors and rations.
Okay,
y'all. We have to wrap it up. You all sent so many questions, and they're wonderful, but unfortunately we have bloviated for far too long to dip into the mailbag. So we are sorry, but we hope it was cathartic for you, perhaps, to type those emails to us. Maybe you grew as a result of it. Thank you for listening to our show. A reminder that you can follow and listen for free on Spotify, which you're likely doing right now. If you want to share the show, besties.fan. This would actually be a pretty good one if people have finished the game and they want to, like, hear what four white people say about it, then we've got them covered. And so that is worth checking out. Plant, tell me about this newsletter everybody's talking about.
Well, you can follow us on Twitter at the Besties Pod. And if you want to join our newsletter, it is the first linked message, a pinned message at the top of the Twitter feed.
That's going to do it for us this week.
We're so tired.
We talked for so long about it. We got to record another episode after this, believe it or not. That's going to do it for this week. So be sure to join us again next week for the Besties. Because shouldn't the world's best friends pick the world's best games?
You should call it the Best of Us.
It's a Spotify original podcast in association with Fox Media. The show is edited by Jelani Carter and produced by Ben Hosley. And our theme song is by Ian Dorsch.
Besties!